Sales Office Consumer Protection Division to go after them, so we give another arm of the state agency, which is used to doing that type of consumer fraud. The second thing it does is it gives a private right of action for that person who happened to have been defrauded to go after them. Both provides for attorney fees, it provides for punitive damages. It's a pretty severe statute. I know I was the chief counsel of the Consumer Protection Division in the Department of Justice back in 1977.
Representative Jones.
Did I hear you say that if you find something that has been stolen and pawned, that that you can go claim that, or the police can, and the pawn broker then has to stand the cost of it himself?
Yes.
Well, isn't that different than we discussed yesterday? It was
mm-hmm.
thought in
it's
mind
different
that you
than...
have to go pay for it in order to get it back.
Yeah, I checked out what I thought was a pawn shop, and it wasn't. Yesterday found out they were unlicensed and they called themselves a jewelry buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, put in the phone book and they had it says, fast cash, you know. And anyway, the police told me that once the case was settled, then we would have to pay the shop for the items. Now, maybe it's different with pawnbrokers.
Yeah, I know in Portland they give up the merchandise. They're out.
Is that right?
Yeah. If they have mm-hmm. taken it in and it's not, it's stolen property, it's basically their liability.
Well, then it would be up to the pawnbroker to purchase it or loan money on it with that in mind.
Definitely.
You know, that they got to make a lot of profit someplace along the line in order to pay for giving that back at
right.
their cost or whatever. Of course, they're not doing anything illegal. But the people that stole it...
They're doing something illegal if they know it's stolen.
Well,
right.
Sure, but they wouldn't buy it if it were that way, not a legitimate one.
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Jones, the pawn shops in Portland, I know, go through, again, the procedure for Senator Wire's benefit. They fill out that form that's handed every day to the police. It has a description of the item, a description of the person,
uh-huh.
everything, and that... is a tremendous benefit. In fact, in the Labor Committee, the Portland Police testified with us that they wanted to retain the state regulation. In subsequent discussions with the department, we tried to come up with a way for them to get out of the nightmare, basically, of going after the secondhand shop. Is there another state agency that may be better off doing that, still retaining the uniform state regulation and policing of the pawn shop itself, but going after the second-hand shop, perhaps through a more effective means.
Now, this is real good information that changes mm-hmm. that, a heck of a lot. What we were working under yesterday or staggering around yesterday.
It clears it up a bit. But the point, you would support the basically unofficial decision of the subcommittee to not repeal
right.
the statutes and prefer the regulation. Now, the department testified that they collect about $7,000 income from a $350 annual license fee, and they say that with the complaint investigation that it ends up costing them about $14,000, so we suggested a doubling of the fee.
Now, just by way of clarification, was that, Mr. Chairman, was that a complaint investigation of licensed pawnbrokers or complaint investigation of secondhand shops that were acting as licensed?
Come forward. Sit there with Paul.
Kind of.
And you're Paul. Paul and Paul.
Paul Aronson, Administrator of Financial Institutions Division. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to answer Mr. Romaine's question, it was those additional expenses were to investigate complaints primarily from licensees mm-hmm. about others who were unlicensed.
Right. So what that is, if you put into the consumer protection law a provision that allows for the Attorney General's office to go after it, the cost to the department does not exist at that point. So there is really no reason to raise the license fee because your investigative costs aren't there at that point.
We've got Chapter 646 in this bill. We could do that. And then we could also double your fees too. Okay.
I'm giving you all these wonderful suggestions, and you want to.
They want to do that, but yeah, well, because
like
your folks are generating the complaints, which is fine. We want them to do that. And then also we'd have an interim study to put it in the right place. There was some pressure on us from Mr. Long to just, I mean, he had a number of suggestions and they were coming very fast, and we thought, well, this is sort of serious and maybe people should look at it. In the meantime, we'd like to leave the laws where they are. And so, Representative Jones.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Romaine here has kind of got to me a little bit here, I think. I hate to let on a group of people, whatever you want to call them, for the good job they're doing, and double their fee when we're not getting to the people that we're trying to get to.
But they're helping us to get to those people. And do you think there'd be much of an objection to a fee increase in order to maintain the complaint investigation function, which is the part Commerce was trying to shake loose of, our Financial Institutions Division?
Well, I guess I need to get some clarification from Paul. The cost, my understanding, the cost isn't responding to the legitimate pawnbroker who says XYZ shop is acting as a pawnbroker and they're not licensed. Right. It's actually sending people out or telephoning or whatever to investigate that secondhand shop.
Correct.
So all we are doing is reporting. If you shift over to consumer protection statutes, then what you've done is shifted that cost of going out and investigating that secondhand shop over to the Attorney General's office. But you don't have it in the department.
So then, Mr. Chairman, though, if the pawnbrokers don't give them that information, then there's nothing to investigate.
They wouldn't need to continue to do that.
They've reported that there's something wrong over there, and then now we're asking them to pay to go do that.
Well, maybe not, Mr. Aronson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what I would suggest as a potential compromise, and I agree with Mr. Romaine, uh-huh. is that, and I have contended to Mr. Romaine and to others in the industry that the actual time going in, looking at the books and making decisions about whether the setup fee is correct and all those issues, while $30 an hour doesn't cover that cost, to be candid with you, we could probably live with that. The part that becomes difficult is, as we've said apparently, you know, repeatedly, is that it's the additional investigative time that's required, the Attorney General fees to go after civil penalties and do other things. If that portion of that statute could be shifted, as Mr. Romaine suggests, to consumer protection, so the pawnbroker, I don't want to discourage them reporting illegal operations. I think they're to be commended for that.
Mr. Weeks, can the you handled the budget for the Department of Justice, correct?
That's right.
Can we stick them with this small $7,000 complaint item and think they can absorb it in their budget?
Mr. Chairman, you could probably place with them any responsibility that you wanted to, but you can bet that the department will come back to you and ask for money to support it. I doubt that we would support their request to you. There's another question here, though, and that's the extent to which the folks you've got here in front of you can go ahead and handle this cost without a fee increase. The fee increase is not set in statute. It's not approved by any legislative review agency. It's set by the supervisor of the banking industry, and so, or whoever takes his or her place in the future. So it may be that in their judgment they can continue doing this. If you want to do an interim study as opposed to just shifting the cost from banking to justice or some other agency and see if there are more statutes than just 646 or more ways that you want to work on this problem. I guess I would suggest to you that the costs are not such that the department couldn't mm-hmm. handle it, at least long enough for you to do some work on it.
Especially if they wanted this bill. Senator Hannan.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be a concern that I have, is it doesn't do any good really to go shifting something, because the people that are going to be investigating are unlicensed and unregulated. And so they're really not doing that much in violation of the law, because they pretty much have an open check to do the type of activities they've been involved with. This morning I spoke with the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's agreed to certainly make this a high priority issue to study during the interim and then come back. And I think what we perhaps should do is look at how can we maintain this for the next biennium until the next session?
Let's leave it alone.
Yeah.
So what we'll do then is we'll amend this bill by taking out the repealers of the Chapter 726, leave it up to financial institutions working with the pawnbrokers. If they need a fee increase or not, they can decide amongst themselves and go ahead, carry the program and leave the statutes in the books, and we'll have an interim study, and we'll try to catch some of these people who have made Mr. Romaine and Senator Hannon and myself angry by ending up being fences. How's that sound?
Mr. Chairman, it does sound good. I do. The possibilities with the consumer protection statute are very real. I doubt if it's going to be that much of a additional burden to the Justice Department to do it, but having been there myself in that exact position, but it's something that it's up to you whether you want to
present.
Mr. Chairman, having sat through the Justice Department hearings and heard from the Attorney General how tightly they have been screwed down year after year, I think if you were in your former position, you might. You might feel differently, but I'm sure that they would be.
Like this would be an invitation to the
Attorney General. It's an invitation for complaints to your bill. Also an invitation for the Attorney General to return.
Also kind of out of the range of a Ways and Means Subcommittee, probably.
Probably. I would think that the Attorney General would argue, too, that if you're going to look at this, don't just race in here and drop this responsibility on me. Let's figure out the long-term comprehensive solution to the problem.
Okay, so there we are.
Thank you
very much for coming by.
Thank you.
Okay, so is there anybody else that ever wants to testify on House Bill 3381? If not, then I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on the same bill. Mr. Weeks, how do we get out of these woods?
Mr. Chairman, I think probably what would be best with your agreement is to go ahead and continue with the department's presentation of the budget material in the blue book. They can run through that, and then we can try to take some logical steps when they've finished with their budget presentation.
Okay. That's when we cut the budget, right? I'm getting anxious.
It's one of the options, Mr. Chairman.
This is the third day we haven't done any cutting yet.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jillian Cater, and I'm the Fiscal Officer in the Department of Commerce, and with me is Bob Miller, who's Deputy Administrator of the Insurance Division. What we thought we could do is to go through this blue book that we passed out yesterday, and I have a couple extra copies if you don't, and talk about what the size of the budget for the new Department of Insurance and Finance would look like. And we could, when we get to the part on the insurance division, then Mr. Miller could talk about the budget request for the insurance division, because when you heard the rest of the Department of Commerce, you hadn't heard financial institutions and insurance
that's
yet.
Correct.
So we could do that now.
Fine.
How this book is put together, there's several different tabs, and the information in the beginning is general information, and then it gets more detailed as you go through the tabs. So if you look under tab A, towards the bottom of the page, you can see that the total budget for the new department would be $58 million and 662 employees. And you can see the different components that's made up there. On the next page, we talk about the changes to the governor's printed budget, and these are in summary numbers. When we proposed a budget for the new department, we created an office of the director for the new department, and that has seven positions in it and an $800,000 cost. We've also deleted eight positions from the workers' comp director's office as a cost-saving measure.
I'm trying to find that on the organization chart, this office of the director. Instead, I find an administrative support division. Is that the same thing?
See, two pages back, you have the organization chart there, and it says the director and deputy. And that's
800 grand there. And then also this administrative support division too, on top of it already. I thought we were going to save money with this move. That's what newspapers told me.
If you go through the list of adjustments, you can see that there's a total cost reduction of $1.5 million, but the very next line, we're saying that there's legislation coming down the road for insurance division that has a potential cost of $1 million, which would leave about $500,000 left in savings. Now, it could be that not all of this legislation would pass that.
Like Senate Bill 323, heck, that it took them three times in the Senate, Senator Wires, is that right, to pass that? Okay. Go ahead.
We wanted to identify all the potential costs that we could, though, so that you would see the, you know, the total picture.
Mr. Chairman, in your proposed structure here, it shows Accident Prevention Division. Yesterday, I thought we were getting an overview that said that would be a separate, distinct function and would not be part of this consolidated effort.
It's a separate division within this department. Right now, it's part of Workers' Comp Department. And Workers' Comp Department becomes a division, and then we separate out Accident Prevention Division, so it's on an equal status with the Workers' Comp, the rest of the Workers' Comp program. So it's part of this department, but it has a division status, rather than being a program within another division.
I see, but it'll still be part of the umbrella, then, of this department.
Right.
Okay.
Now, this Administrative Support Division, is it kind of like ASSD
mm-hmm.
in Commerce?
Mm-hmm. And we're proposing no changes to that budget.
The computer and all that?
The
there was a bunch of computer money that we had unscheduled, I think, pending
right.
data processing review by legislature and exec.
In the is Department of Commerce
your,
budget?
Yeah, uh-huh.
That... that need isn't there anymore with this reorganization because our units will go to Commerce Boards and Divisions will go to different homes. Now they'll have data processing needs, but it will be different than that original request.
Oh, good. Then we saved a lot of money and we don't have to buy a new computer.
That's right.
That's right. Okay.
There's another bill, as you know, that disperses the rest of the Department
right.
of Commerce, and in that, the ASSD unit within Department of Commerce, which was, I think it was $3.1 million budget, we're requesting only an expenditure limitation of $300,000 to continue that unit for a maximum of 3 months. But some of the positions that were in there, we had to transfer out to the different boards and divisions that are going to different homes because, you know, cash sharing
yeah.
functions have to continue, and some of those things do. But.
So we may even get that bill if it ever gets out of Senator Hill's committee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I think Ybor will probably have to, maybe, unless Senator Hill moves rapidly.
We're showing that there would be $489,000 of savings in the insurance division from the reorganization. We're showing savings in the financial institutions division from the, that's a result
of the
tax. That
was a million we talked about yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that reduction would probably have to occur whether or not this new department is created.
Yeah.
But there's an additional $328,000 of savings within financial institutions. And that's a deletion of a couple of positions. And the administrative services charges that was in a line item, S&S item, in the Department of Commerce budget.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
If you show a reduction in what is going to be required there, how are we going to resolve the $1 million deficit that the financial services section currently is facing?
Budget cut. It's the cuts that we went through yesterday, the reduction of, what, 11 positions, as I recall?
And that's, and that's how we achieve
right.
this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's still going to be a cash flow problem, as was addressed by Mr. Long yesterday.
Even with these severe reductions, there is likely a cash flow problem because they receive most of their revenue at one time during the year. And it's a timing of the cash flow that causes a problem. They may have to borrow for a couple of months and then their revenue comes in and they're okay again. What we wouldn't allow is for, in any one biennium, for a program to spend any more than the revenue that comes in. Revenues would always have to equal or exceed expenditures within a biennium, but at any point, any month within one biennium, there could be a cash flow problem in Financial Institutions Division.
Does that appear to be the only one that's going to have a cash flow problem of all the different consolidations?
Well, no, it isn't. Insurance Division also has a, could have a cash flow problem. In the Insurance Division, they were planning on having a fee increase last fall, and the increase wasn't made. It was partly, well, at that time the Insurance Division thought that they had the statutory authority to increase fees without going to Ways and Means or the Emergency Board. How they read the statute, they thought they had that authority. After the change in the administration and the new commissioner, insurance commissioner, came on board, he realized, yes, we need a fee increase. By that time, it was, I think, in late February, we thought we were going to be up in Ways and Means just momentarily. Mm-hmm. And we told them, Department of Commerce said, no, you do need to go to Ways and Means. Rather than go in at that point and tell you we needed a fee increase without having the total program laid out, we advised them to defer until we could get to Ways and Means. And unfortunately, because of the timing, it's late, and the Insurance Division could be within just a few thousand dollars cash at the end of the biennium. So they need a fee increase very badly, and what we were hoping for is that you could allow them to increase their fees effective upon passage of the bill, so we could even maybe get it before the end of the biennium.
I think the fee increase requires just approval by Ways and Means. That's my understanding.
Yeah, it says the Legislative Review Agency.
Yes, so that doesn't mean we have to have a bill passed. So it does mean you have to convince this subcommittee, and we have to convince our colleagues on the full committee.
Okay.
A few thousand, that's too bad. But the former director of the department, I guess, had put an across-the-board order out on all divisions to not ever ask for any fee increases, and so as we were waiting through the Department of Commerce, we ran into lots of problems where they'd run out of their ending balance. Probably one of those, huh?
Bob, do you want
to Mr. Chairman, the previous commissioner had determined, I think sometime in late 1985, that if the fee schedule continued as it was, we would overcollect by a great deal. And at that point, she unilaterally reduced fees at the Insurance Division. And so that's one of the reasons we're now ending up with a cash flow problem at the end of the biennium.
Okay. So you're kind of asking us to look at that problem separate and apart from increases that may or may not occur depending on the passage of certain legislation. Okay. Reverend Jones.
And if we do that, then the legislation passes that has fees in also.
I don't know. Do they?
No.
Did they affect these? Does the legislation affect the
Yes. The well, different pieces of legislation that's out there could amount to $1 million worth of additional expenditures.
Then where do you get that?
Well,
would you be asking for those? Would you come to the board then and ask for authority to collect those?
Our preference would be to request you to approve a fee level that's high enough to support this additional legislation, and then we would come back in for the and request the expenditure authority so that the division wouldn't have to raise fees twice in a row.
I don't think we'd do that.
Yeah, this seems to have, well, it's happened all the time. But this is maybe one of the heavier ones to kind of show up here simply because $1 million worth of legislation that could pass the last day of the session.
And there's lots and lots of insurance agents with phones in all of our districts.
The The size of the fee increase, Mr. Chairman, is a $5 increase for original appointments and a $6 for appointment renewals.
Is Mr. Long explaining that? I notice he's on a speaking tour across the state. Is that one of the things he's going to be covering? Do you know?
I don't know, but I don't think that it is.
We get to explain it. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't mean to distract you. First, I thought we were talking about an immediate need, and then you would have a fee increase to take care of that, but then you're saying, well, why don't you make it big enough to handle all of these bills that might pass? And I can understand not wanting to change the fees like a couple of times within months. But on the other hand, I don't think we ever go ahead and, before legislation passes, increase fees to meet some target that isn't established. So what can you live till the next e-board at all with what's left in your accounts?
Did you want to go ahead?
Or Representative Jones?
Well, just quickly, that would make a great endorsement. Just say, you just should well vote for this because we already got the money.
Another, it is a difficult dilemma, and it's unfortunate that at this point in time we're down this low in cash. What's unfortunate, it'll take months to build up an ending balance sufficient for cash flow. So our request is fees at the higher level immediately. It's possible, though, if you approved them at a lower level, then we could come back later and address it again.
Mr. Chairman, at the current fee level, our projected ending balance now, I think, is in the neighborhood of around $1,500. We believe that coming out of the legislation, we think there are reasonable prospects that there will be substantial change, for instance, in the rate making and the rate hearing process. We want to be able to gear up to do that right away. We have a good prospect now of hiring an actuary. We think we have an individual who's committed. His salary is substantial. We will face an immediate cash flow going into the new biennium, and we want to be prepared to fulfill public expectations in terms of the way we process rate filings and rate hearings, and want to be able to respond quickly in the next biennium. And right now,
you weren't going to suggest the barbers and hairdressers.
I think you've disabused me of that idea. Well, Mr. Chairman, an immediate increase in the fees isn't going to resolve this problem, because as Jones pointed out, it's going to take 6, 8, maybe a year in terms of months in order to get them into a cash position. It seems like you'd be better served by not making any decision on a fee increase right now and waiting till your first emergency board, when A, you'll know what legislation has passed, and B, then you can come in and wrap up the legislation with the increase that's needed to continue the existing program all in the same package, as opposed to having a small increase now and another increase in 4 months, or an increase to cover programs that you haven't even legislated yet.
Yeah.
So if you were to do nothing and just wait till August or September, the problem doesn't seem to me to will have grown any. They're still going to have to borrow money. That's the purpose of some of these funds, being able to move money back and forth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with the bank broke, they won't be able to borrow any money to finish out with till they...
No, they can't borrow from the banks. They're broke. Insurance is broke. Let's see. Workers' comp. We don't want them. We don't want them in that fund. Well, maybe we're back to the barbers and hairdressers.
You won't, Mr. Chairman. You won't have them. They'll be off using their money in the health division.
See what a mistake you made when in that reorganization you forgot about money. Okay. I think the analyst has sort of said what we're going to have to do. Unless there's, under current law, there is a different way in which it would be administered that you could tell me about that would justify.
Mr. Chairman, I think that Mr. Weeks' recommendation is very workable. The only drawback is that we have to pay interest on the money, so it's, you know, it would be nice to, we would still have to borrow. We have to borrow a little bit more with his recommendation. But it's a workable recommendation.
Who's going to loan you the money?
You can have loans from the state treasurer, or if this bill goes through and we can borrow money from one of the other operating units, and then...
The last time we talked about it when we were in financial institutions, we didn't think the treasurer would have thought it was a good enough risk getting money out of him, so... But maybe it's changed now. Okay. Go ahead, then.
Speaking about revenue adjustments, we're showing that there's no change in the workers' compensation assessment projected due to the development of this new department. Now, if there's other pieces...
Anyway.
Representative, Mr. Chairman, my understanding of the process is if the Ways and Means Committee approves the reclass, then it becomes part of the budget.
And the court is then in the...
No, it's not. What you've done in the past is to, when the governor has recommended reclassifications without funding, you've instructed the agency that if they go ahead, in fact, you really haven't said go ahead and do it. You've said if you go ahead and reclass positions, we want you to identify the source of funding. Maybe you've de facto agreed to do it, but the point is, if it comes out of S&S, you want to know about it for next biennium.
They tend to do it. Yeah.
They do it all the time.
They do it all the time.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, they have the authority to reclass if they can find permanent funding at any point.
Even poor little starving tiny agencies will get a reclass, and by golly, they'll find a way to fund that.
Except, though, the bad thing about that is they reclass without funding, and then it's in the next year's budget without any action taken on it of any kind, and then the next
That's exactly right. But,
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's precisely, though, why you've been asking them to identify the positions, the amount of the reclass, and the source of funding for the reclass, so that 2 years from now you can go back and say, you get the reclass of the PIX system, the payroll system, but it's going to come out somewhere else, so that if there isn't a net gain from biennium to biennium, rolling forward.
Then there's that bill that the Ways and Means Committee introduced, said that they can't go off and do reclasses without coming to the e-board or to Ways and Means.
No, that's a good.
It's like a good deal. Higher ed, I think, needs it more than anyone.
I'm sure they do.
Mr. Chairman, we had another item, too. What our original plan was to amend the appropriation bill for the workers' comp department and take out the words that say workers' comp department and insert department of insurance and finance and then change the dollar amounts. And in that bill, we had drafted an amendment that would give to the insurance division non-budgeted rate-making authority. And I think it's Senate Bill 323, one of the provisions in that bill requires the insurance commissioner to hold hearings if an insurance company submits a rate filing. The commissioner, under certain situations, will hold a rate hearing. The cost of that rate hearing would be paid for by the insurance company. What we're requesting and what we believe the intention of Senate Bill 323 is that the company pays the cost of that hearing and the insurance division provides it, and costs such as if they had a pro tem hearing referee or travel or AG costs could be a non-budgeted expenditure paid for by that insurance company. And we would need an amendment to the appropriation bill to do that, to say that this would be a non-limited or non-budgeted expenditure. What we could do is give you maybe an estimated amount, but it isn't part of the budgeted expenditure limitation.
Why don't you give us an estimate?
Well, the problem of budgeting for it is we don't know the level of hearings that will be asked for.
Well, but there's another way other than a non-limited item would be to budget it, and then if you ran into trouble, you can come to the emergency board and ask for an increase in limitation.
be another way to handle it.
That would be another way to handle it.
Okay, now.
One of the things we might want to do on this, it's uncomfortable to have a non-limited expenditure like this, what we could do is, I haven't had an opportunity to look at other agencies that have rate-making authority, and I could take a look at those and see what the process is for other agencies.
Like the PUC.
Yeah, if those are non-limited expenditures or if they're budgeted expenditures, maybe that'd help you to reach a decision on this.
That'd be helpful, thank you. Okay, now, there's a workers' comp bill. But the division or the department's bill somewhere, Senator Trost's committee?
Under tab D, we have the workers' comp bill, and it's Senate Bill 5506, and we've prepared amendments to that bill that could be passed to give a budget to this new department.
Well, it would be for the division then.
If you amended 5506, it would be the budget for the new Department of Insurance and Finance.
Oh, no, we're not going to do that. I don't think. I think there ought to be probably one vote on the department with its budget. I think it gets pretty cumbersome to put two different bills out. Apply to the same concept, yeah. I think you're in trouble if you try that.
So, are you saying you'd make it part of the...
Yeah, we'd probably put the appropriation in 3381. I believe that was the discussion we had with the fiscal officer.
That's right, Mr. Chairman.
So, be aware of that if you wanted to make amendments to 5506. We'll probably get a number from the other subcommittee that we'll put in 3381.
We agree with you that it would be fine to put them in one bill. That wasn't our original direction, but
I think you can understand what I'm talking about. It's the votes is what I would worry about. You could get people, oh, it's a great reorganization, and they'd vote for it, and then, oh, pay for it. Well, I think that would be a danger like that. Now, the other thing that we've talked about is to make sure there's no intermingling of monies. And we were thinking not only of amending the bill on page 5 of the printed bill, line 10, lines 15 and 16, we're going to delete those words to the greatest extent possible. Right?
Then with that, maybe I should be asking Mr. Weeks a question. Then each function would have its own separate identifiable account. However, because of the potential for the cash flow problems and still be able to move the money around within the department, but it would still be dedicated funds that would have to be paid back with the interest to that dedicated account.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hinton, depending on the authority that you give them, you could establish separate funds, one for insurance, one for workers' comp. You could have a single fund with separate accounting mechanisms. Either of those options are open to you, and then the authority for the director to, for the purposes of resolving cash flow problems, move money back and forth with interest accruing to the donating or contributing program.
Would this be adequate language then that we have here with the, or would we have to specifically add something to that?
I think we need to establish different funds. We were thinking maybe three funds, insurance, finance, workers' comp. Those are basically the three revenue sources, right?
And consolidated. Are you going to put them under finance?
I don't know.
To my way of thinking,
yeah.
if you have one fund, when you make your cash deposits, you deposit it into one bank account, one fund. It's by cost center that we keep all of the different expenditures separate. I believe that the funds can stay just as dedicated being in one cash account than if they're in different ones.
Well, but it's like having old bank accounts, right? If you have three different funds, it'd be like having three different bank accounts, and then you can control, well, just for me, we can control by signature. There are other ways to control access in and out of funds. That's a little safer than mingling it all into one account where a whole bunch of people write checks from.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I have the same. I have my own personal checking account, and then I have an estate account that I'm a trustee of. I mean, I don't put it all in one account and say, trust me.
Right.
I have to verify it at the end of each year and show an itemized list of what I spent my money for. And I think that's what we're here, is that we're concerned about each one having a separate accountability.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're looking for. You're looking for, you know, a little more freedom, and we're looking to control a little more. That's what's going on here most of the afternoon, right? And that's probably normal. Mm-hmm.
Person Jones. Yeah, sub 1 of 17 is
to create a
fund.
Yeah, it creates a fund. I thought maybe we'd maybe change that. Then we'd have different funds.
It's certainly cleaner, Mr. Chairman. It's easier to explain. You don't have to get into this discussion about sub-accounts and cash accounts and so on. And Mr. Brown's up here, so he must have something he wants to share with you on this topic.
Well, nothing constructive, probably.
Mr. Brown.
I would plead for one fund with separate account. The Workers' Compensation Department right now operates out of one fund with four or five distinct separate accounts within that. We call them reserves, but they're nothing more than separate accounts. The separate accounts create the same kind of guarantees on getting money in the right place and having accounting for it in the right place and making sure that that money collected for retroactive reserve assessments, for example, are used specifically for that purpose. And that can be verified by the Division of Audit, by any auditor, anyone that wants to check it. It's all handled cleanly, but it is one fund. We don't have three separate funds that we have to keep accounts of. We have one fund with separate accounts. Mm-hmm. And
that's exactly what we're talking about. One of the funds would be a workers' comp fund with the separate accounts like you described. Only there'd be a different one for insurance, yep, and a different one for financial institutions.
You're talking about three funds.
Yeah.
As I indicated, probably I'm not saying anything constructive, but I'm pleading for one fund.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Jerry, I think what you still wind up is one fund for workers' comp.
Yeah.
You would be able to make as many sub funds within that one account.
I think
what we were discussing was that we did not want an insurance company's example of paying for some activity in the insurance commissioner's office, then paying for something in the banking.
I understand the concern. I understand the concern, and I think that we all have that concern.
Yeah.
All I'm suggesting is that one fund with separate accounts gives you the same assurance as three funds.
But this wouldn't change how workers' comp would operate.
No,
there still was a worker comp.
No, doesn't change
one,
how
one
workers'
iota.
No. It was for the Department of Insurance and Finance that I speak, not for workers' comp. Okay.
Now the question that arises, if we establish funds, and I have a strong feeling that's the direction we're headed, especially when I talk to co-chairs, very strong. Then we have to deal with the question of borrowing, where we have some funds that are broke or near broke. Now, how do we do that? We don't do inter-fund transfers, do we? Probably the funds will have to borrow from the treasurer,
I'm not sure that's necessary. I think, Mr. Chairman, council could probably help us on the kind of language we need, but we have borrowing from one fund to another that exists in other agencies throughout state government. As long as the language in the statute makes it clear that there's interest accruing on the borrowed funds.
So when it all gets back to the right place.
Right.
Okay.
I might also add that that's one of the things that the Secretary of State auditors would look at, too. If you're borrowing from an interest-bearing fund, that the principal and the interest is paid back, so that there's a safeguard.
So we'd authorize that kind of borrowing to give you the flexibility to manage this. Okay. Now, Mr. Whitworth.
Chairman, well, Mr. Brown's here. You said that you have only one fund. The statutes talk about an administrative fund and an emergency fund. Do you not use the emergency fund? And
the emergency fund, I think, is a part of the administrative fund.
It's the check writing revolving.
It's a check writing revolving.
Yeah, but it's created as a separate, established as a separate fund. That's why I just wondered if it was.
But whether you transfer the money from.
I don't believe it is.
Okay, so just so that we can clarify this, if you had an administrative fund for workers' comp and a insurance fund and a financial institutions fund, and then you're also requesting a revolving fund, the revolving fund would be accessible to all of the elements within the organization and all the parts of the new department.
We want all of the units to be able to use the revolving fund.
Now, who feeds the revolving fund?
Originally they would make a transfer from the single fund to the revolving fund. Now if you have three separate funds, presumably there'll be three deposits from each of those into the revolving fund. Is that right?
Well, the typical revolving fund is used for let's say an emergency expenditure of some type that one of the things we have authority to use it for is pay compensation benefits, for
right.
example.
Yeah.
Insurer goes broke, we pay compensation benefits. Under this system, if the revolving fund would be there to serve all three funds, if you had an expenditure that needed to be made from one of those three funds and you needed to make it immediately, you couldn't wait to draw a warrant. That's why you use the revolving fund. You'd make that expenditure from the revolving fund, and then you simply ask for a warrant to be drawn on the proper fund to reimburse the revolving fund. So all three funds are using the revolving fund as a resource.
Right. The question is, how does the money get into the revolving
exactly.
fund?
Not
There's
how. No money there.
Well, there has to be money there to draw a warrant on it.
No. Well, you draw the warrant before you make the, if you, well, Okay.
Yeah, there's.
Yeah. In order to establish it.
Normally you don't have to, but yeah, create a balance there. Yeah. And actual practice doesn't work that way.
So, how do we build this?
That's why insurance companies, one of the many ways insurance companies make their money is they establish an account that they don't put very much money into. They're able to make money on the float by writing a warrant. Later depositing the money, being able to hold their money in their investment in an interest-bearing account for the maximum length of time. That's why it's cheaper for them. One of the many reasons it's cheaper for them to spend their money on avoiding making payments as long as possible. That's why there's so many, one of the many reasons there's so many lawyers, defense lawyers, and employees.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think, wouldn't you just, I guess I'm directing this to mm-hmm. Joan, you'd have a deposit from each of your three separate funds into your revolving fund, and that would create your fund, and then you'd feed it from each of the funds depending on how they used it.
Perhaps what I would feel more comfortable with, if you wouldn't mind, is if we could go back and talk with the Executive Department Accounting Division and get some input from
would
them.
You?
And perhaps from the auditors on
they're kind of start with the separate funds idea. Take that and then decide what, because you've got an administrative fund, and an emergency fund that we talked about, I don't know what else, and a revolving fund. So whether you need that many more funds besides the three that we're graciously going to give you, I don't know. So that you should probably get some advice about.
Mr. Chairman, on page 5, it says there's created by transfer from the insurance and finance fund a revolving administrative account in the amount of $100,000. Right. And under the scheme that you've described, you could simply change that language to indicate there's created by transfer from the
funds.
Workers' Compensation Division Administrative Fund, if that's one of the funds,
right.
And that's the largest one, so that would be the one to use.
Okay.
Just substitute whatever one of those three funds you name is in there.
Got it. Now, I should ask you about that amount. It's a pretty large amount as compared to other agencies, but maybe you know why it should be $100,000 with your experience. Usually, we've seen them $10,000, $15,000.
25
was the injustice would be the highest one, so maybe there's some special reason here.
Well, I think that we have, on occasion, we refund to self-insured employers an excess deposit. On occasion, an insurer goes broke, we have to pay compensation benefits by cash out of this fund. And I think that it's for those reasons that that is...
You have experience where you've had to make a payment?
Had to make payments of compensation, workers' compensation benefits.
For an example?
If we ran into... so far, all we've had is small insurance companies go broke, so it hasn't taxed the $100,000. I think the $100,000 is necessary.
Okay. Yes. Charles? No, if we keep track of it and all.
They keep putting back in, which...
Yeah, and it's created by a transfer from the Workers' Compensation Division's money. It's not cash coming out of the general fund or something of that nature. Which some of them are.
Which some of them are,
yes.
Which the ones we were talking about, which we're trying to keep going. Okay.
Of course, Mr. Chairman, there's no general fund money in this at all.
I don't know. Is there any anywhere?
Not in this
room. Not
here.
Nothing that I've been able to find.
Okay. Yeah, a little federal side of that. Okay, what we'll do then is come back on Friday. Mr. Weeks will have some recommendations.
I'll be ready to talk with you about budgets for the insurance and financial institutions division, and then we can cover the cash for the accounts that you want. Maybe run through the amendments to date that you have so far. And if you're agreeable, talk a little bit about limitations, programmatic or categorical limitations, mm-hmm. as opposed to single limitations, which is what's been proposed at this time.
Yeah, that's what we'll try to get through those kinds of decisions then, and that will basically close our discussions on this House Bill 3381, and then we'll wait for a number to put in mm-hmm. on the workers' comp side. That's what we'll do. Right, so pretty much we'll finish, and then we'll just have to hold that until Senator Trost completes his work, and then we'll zoom out like that. Okay. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Public Safety of the Joint Ways and Means Committee meeting, May 21st, 1987. 1:30 p.m. room H174.
The subcommittee on public safety and boats will come to order. So, Mr. Simpson, what do we do now?
Mr. Chairman, we have four bills. I don't know, but I believe most of the interest here might be in Senate Bill 554.
Well, let's do that. We could release people. Is that correct, Mr. Don Heffner?
Maybe there are interest in all of them.
I believe there are at least one person here interested in that from DQ.
Well then, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 554.
So with us is Paul Don Heffner, Director of the Marine Board, who is a proponent. Yes?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Paul Don Heffner, Director of Marine Board. Senate Bill 554 is companion legislation to Senate Bill 551. That bill has passed the both houses. It prohibits the use of certain tributyl tin or TBT-based paints on boat hulls. TBT is an anti-fouling ingredient used in bottom paint. It's been found to have serious adverse environmental effects, both in this country and elsewhere. This bill, Senate Bill 554, was amended by the Senate Agricultural and Natural Resources Committee to reflect agency concerns over the mailing of a brochure to all boat owners, which was in the original bill. The amended bill requires a mailing to owners only of boats 20 feet and more in length, and it's a special one-time mailing, which we're required to carry out by April 15th of next year. We estimate the fiscal impact of that at $6,000. We have about almost 16,000, 15,700 registered boats 20 feet and more whose owners would need to be notified. The biggest part of that expense is in postage and printing. That's based on current rates. The agency will provide necessary personnel to develop and coordinate the brochure in cooperation with DEQ, and they've indicated as well in their willingness to cooperate with us in preparing the brochure as directed. During consideration of the Marine Board's budget, the agency was invited to return to the Emergency Board foreign expenditure limitation increase or general fund appropriation to carry out Senate Bill 554. There was some discussion of a general fund appropriation in lieu of an increase in other fund limitation because of the benefits of notifying people about this extend beyond boat owners to the general public. Given that direction, we don't believe that it's necessary to increase our limitation as a part of the bill, provided that it's understood that the fiscal impact will be adjusted later with a limitation increase for service and supplies to carry out the mission.
Can't you just eat it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we were to eat it, it would come from our existing safety and boating safety and education programs. We would prefer not to have to carve it out of those programs, which we also feel are quite important. The agency would have sufficient beginning balance or ending balance if limitation increase was provided in order to provide the revenue to fund that. But I would ask for a limitation increase so that we wouldn't have to eat it out of existing programs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else want to testify on Senate Bill 554? No one. Thought there was someone from the DEQ? You are.
Is the DEQ going to survive, President Jones?
In some form. Okay. Hi.
Hi. My name is Christina Wolniakowski. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality and the Water Quality Division, and I just want to express my support for this bill. The department worked on the testimony for Senate Bill 551, investigated that, and encouraged that a public education program be retained in Senate Bill 554.
Okay. This is pretty bad stuff, right?
Yes. Very bad.
Because Representative Hanneman has been talking about it most of the session.
Yes, it's toxic at a 20 parts per trillion level.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions about it?
We've already passed the other enabling bill, is that correct? And that was the one that prevents it from being used or sold or?
Yes, Senate Bill 551 is basically prohibits the sale of TBT paints for boats less than 25 meters in length. And for boats over 25 meters in length, the anti-fouling paint can be used, but it's got to have a special formulation with low leaching rates so that the amount of paint that's actually leached off the boat in order to control the anti-fouling organisms leaches off at a rate that would be comparable to its degradation in the environment.
So that's what the informational program would be conducting, and that would be through primarily the Fisheries What Association or licensures, or how would you mail out? How do you know who these? It's estimated you're going to have to mail out $3,000 worth of cost to mail out to these people. How do you know who they are and where they're at? Are they all registered?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon. These are people that have their boats registered with the Marine Board, so it's a matter of going into our file, doing a computer sort, selecting those over 20 feet in length, and mailing a notice to those individuals. They're people with a registered boat.
Would this, Mr. Chairman, would this include other boats coming into Oregon that are not necessarily registered in Oregon as well? For instance, if a commercial fishing boat, say like from California, docked at Brookings, unloaded their catch in Brookings, but they're primarily based in California, how would they get notice of this?
We wouldn't be able to provide them notice through the mailing. The bill also directs us to make the brochure available to port district offices and marine supply places on the coast. So that's one possible source. Also, I think within the marine